21. Fragments. A marching Bane Lord Titan erupts in flames and falls, killing hundreds on the ground below. There are so many war engines in the advancing line, its loss is barely noticed. At the blast of a horn, 12th Austra Auxilia rises to the firestep. 1,200 loyalist soldiers in ball helmets surge out of their lines and dugouts and charge into the unknown. The unknown is probably their doom, but it is preferable to the trenches they are leaving behind, where every shadow whispered and sniggered at them. Defenders plunge from the huge bulwarks and curtain walls. Some are burning and streak like comets into the smoke far below. It is impossible to tell if death has caused them to fall, or if they are falling to their deaths. In the Kathmandu precinct, not far from the Jade Bailey, a Castia, bondsman of House Veroni, and pilot of the Knight Armiger Elatus, walks alone. After the engine wore hell at Mercury Wall, and the shattering of the great Titanicus formations, she has formed fealty ties with the Legio Solaria. A temporary pledge, she believes, an exigency troth. Princeps Abhani Lus Mohana needs all the engines she can get in her purview, and Acastia cannot walk alone. But she is alone, effectively. Sections of Legio Solaria are spread thin across the precinct, and all the links are fettered by distortion and twitching interference. The scratching, intermittent wash of the new spherics is driving migraine scissors into her brain, and Elatus is skittish and thready, unable to scent others of its kind. The place is lonely and empty. Somewhere, according to the last reports, mass engine wars are raging in the southern sanctum. The Great Mother of the Imperial Hunters is driving the bulk of her remaining legio, along with 5 maniples, against the massed demon machines near the funeral pyre of Bab Bastion. Acastia can imagine the fury. But here it is silent. The vacant streets and creeping veils of smoke speak to her more of war's desolation than any frenzy of combat. This was the palace. Not a palace. The palace. Acastia surveys the deceitful patterns of the sensoria, the choppy flood of thermal tracks, electrostatic signals, motion tremblers. She adjusts her tactical abstracts and walks. Squalls of dark rain that could be oil or blood patter off the armiger's cowling, off the smaragdine lacquerwork and the polished ivory. The pennants of her broken house, red and silver, swing lank from her weapon arms. A track lights. Acastia pans and transmits an alert signal that she is sure no one will hear. Ahead, the 86K ministration building, its primary doorway open to the elements. She sees something move. Something unreeve through the entrance, like a mooring rope slipping through a boat's hawsel, like a serpent. She advances, weapons live, thermal spears and chain blades, auto guns. The munition hoppers read low, so she aims to make any kills blades first. Her target bursts into the open, slamming through the broken doorway. It emerges, and then keeps emerging, a colubrine shape of pulsating meat and muscle with the girth of an aurochs armoured transport. It doesn't seem to stop coming. More and more of it extrudes from the entrance. The front half of it, pale and colloid, undulates across the wet ground towards her and raises its head, a maggot mouth yawning like a lamprey's sphincter maw, surrounded by lump teeth. Fronds of tentacle sublimbs writhe around the mouth and lash at her. Her target Auspex refuses to lock it. The thing is huge, and right there, but the new spherics waver and the guns refuse to hard lock. Tentacles whip out. They are tipped with bone harpagons. Acastia feels the heavy thumps as these organic grappling hooks strike the armiger's hull and puncture and grip. She hears and feels the steel and ceramite-shod heels of Elatus screeching as the engine against its will is dragged across the rock crete towards the gaping mouth. Blades it is, then. As the palace convulses and dies, noise is everywhere and almost absolute. It is layered. The deep and constant booming of the mass weapons, the sledgehammer thump of the orbital batteries at the port of the Lion's Gate, the pounding of artillery, the hornblast of engines, the thunder of the falling walls, the chatter and cackle of weapons, the screaming of the masses. The sounds combine and blend, becoming a constant, whirling vortex of noise, a steady roar, a breathless churn. Millions caught inside the palace trap collapse from acoustic shock or go mad and die. Some places, odd and eerie pockets, are mysteriously quiet. The Hall of Governance behind the Clanium Library is one of them. It appears to have been ransacked twice, once by the clerks and administrators in their haste to evacuate, and then by some unknown force that blasted through it like a winter gale. Fafnir Ran, Lord Seneschal of the Imperial Fists, advances through the stillness. His weapons are raised. With the surviving chiefs of the Huskarls, via Patchy Vox, he is attempting to engineer a defence of the northeast sanctum approach. The hall is oddly silent. Papers scatter the floor. The paint peels, white flaked, back to show arsenic green primer. The varnish of the railings and banisters has buckled in a craquelure that suggests intense heat. He leads first assault carder forward. Mizos and Halen have command of support carders in the other wing of the building. They have, Ran estimates, 10 minutes to secure the location and the plaza outside, and draw up double lines of Astartes and light armour before the first of the traitors arrive. They're coming through Exultant Quarter, onto the Maxis Processional and the Avenue of Justice. Tracking suggests Death Guard and Iron Warriors, but Ran suspects the World Eaters and the Sons of Horus will lead the way, for since the walls broke, they have been the most rapacious and the fastest moving. In the next chamber, the old foxed mirrors that once loomed over the rows of rubricators at their desks are bleeding. It's probably rust seeping out of the wall fixings. What else could it be? He checks his heads up. Mapping shows one more chamber ahead before they reach the southern side of the building. There they can set up firing positions along the second floor windows that will turn the plaza into a killing field. Mizos and Halen should shortly be in position. One of his men signals for him. Kalodin, one of the newborn, accelerated through the progenitive program into the ranks. He's studying the old mirrors.
"Leave it," Ran instructs.
"My lord," says Kalodin.
Ran goes to him. He sees the scarlet drips plinking off the edge of the mirror's frame onto the floor. He sees what so fascinates Kalodin in the mirror. Ran is not in the reflection. Neither is Kalodin, nor any of the men. Against the mirror's silvered tane, the room is clean. It is full of scriptorum desks, and cowled scribes working, and cogitators chattering out reams of data sheets, and servitors distributing files. The image moves, but it is silent. Ran raises an axe to smash the glass. As his blade comes up, the scribes in the reflection all turn and look at him. Their eyes are weeping blood. He sees what is behind them. The vague mass of swarming darkness and ash, the baleful eyes, the barracuda jaws, and he knows that what is behind the long-dead scribes in the reflection is actually behind him. He turns. The Neverborn laughs. The shooting starts.